And with that, let's get into our first talk today with Mayor Shelby Ronstad. Shelby, thanks for being here.
Pleasure to be here, Chris, and good morning to all your listeners.
Well, as we were mentioning, you've been started with the city about 15 years ago. I think, was it on the Planning Zoning Commission, your first public foray there?
Yep. Yeah, actually, even before that, I served on the steering committee for the comprehensive plan. And that was what became the 2009 comprehensive plan, and that started in 2007.
Okay, so you've been on the city, involved the city government one way or another for over 15 years. After serving on the, after first the comp plan, then planning and zoning, you became a council member. Were you appointed to your first one?
Yeah. Originally, I was appointed to fill Marsha Ogilvie's vacant seat when she was elected mayor.
Okay.
Yep, and that was it. So that was completing her term. It was a two-year term, and then I ran for that seat in the next election.
In 2013, yeah.
No, actually, it was, wait, is that right? I think it would have been, I think you're right.
2013.
Well, you know better than I do. Okay.
I actually looked it up.
Excuse me.
And then you served most of a term, because then you ran for mayor in 2015.
Yep. Yeah. That's right.
So you've had now two terms as mayor.
Mm-hmm.
You're closing out your eighth year as mayor of Sandpoint.
I'll mention, there's only been two-term mayors in Sandpoint's history.
No
so,
kidding.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to believe, actually, in over 100 years, but
it is kind of hard to believe. But I guess, you know, I want you to tell us about what you feel like your biggest accomplishments were, maybe some of your biggest disappointments. But before that, what got you wanting to serve in local government?
Yeah. Well, that's a great question. You know, I think at the time, back in 2007, 2008, I was getting involved in planning. I was a small business owner. I owned and operated Common Knowledge Bookstore and Cafe. And as I've shared with people who've asked this question in the past, you know, I ended up before the Planning and Zoning Commission on numerous issues, from public art to expanding a business in a residential neighborhood. And ultimately, I just was encouraged by fellow citizens, by mentors of mine, and even by city staff to get more involved in the city. So, I was looking to take on more responsibility and serve, and I was always interested in planning related issues, design. And, kind of happened that way. Once you get involved, it's something like a slippery slope, and there's just, there's a vacuum, for leadership there at the city. And we're always in need for people to serve on committees and commissions, let alone council and beyond. So, I think, you know, once you get involved and you start to learn, then you become more valuable to the organization and you feel even more called to serve and help make the organization as successful as it can be.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully that happens to a lot of other people, because we do need people that will step up to help and lead the city in that way. And of course, the planning commission is an unpaid position. That's strictly volunteer. The council makes a small stipend, I think.
Yeah, that's right. But basically, it's enough to cover health insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the mayor's position really is modeled as a half-time or less, right? And just based on what the pay is. Because the pay, I think, is $25,000 a year is the number that's
I think it's 18. Well, it's going up now.
It will be going up.
But yeah, I think it was 18. It's currently 18.
Okay. Hey, you're a bargain, man.
Yeah.
Yes. So
we don't do it for the money.
Yeah, exactly. Let's take a look back. What do you consider your biggest accomplishment? I know some pretty big things did happen during your term.
Yeah, it's hard to pick one. I'm sitting here. Last night I'm laying in bed, you know, kind of thinking about this morning, and I made a list of bullet points that I wanted to mention, and I've got probably 25 things here in front of me that could be on that list, and it is hard to pick one. But you know, if I were to, I guess, step back at, you know, 50,000 feet kind of thing, I think just the overall approach that the city has taken these last 8 years was a really big transition from how we've operated in the past, and that is to really operate as a professional organization with a strategic vision, and that was something that was wholly missing before. When I came in 2000, beginning of 2016, the city, you know, we had great staff at the time, but the way that we talk about it is really all the departments were siloed and not coordinating together very well. So structurally, there were some problems that created limitations for the city, and there was no continuity from one elected mayor and council to the next. And so, and there was no strategic vision. So, competing priorities, you know, it kind of came down to, you know, which way the wind was blowing as to what priorities rose to the surface, what got funded and, you know, what projects and what department, that kind of thing. And so coming in 2016, one of the first things that we did is create a strategic plan, which was the first in the city's history. And that really gave us a clear strategic vision driven by the mayor and envisioned by the council to really set the sights on where we're going and how we're going to get there. And it really allowed all of those competing priorities to fall in line and filter out which is the most important in terms of an alignment with the strategic vision and with the support of the council. And it really helped us, you know, think strategically long-term and plan accordingly to ensure that we're making the best use of our limited resources. And so not very exciting, maybe, but...
Well, as part of that, the city, I'm not sure what year it was, but brought on a city administrator position.
Yeah, actually, so you're right. That was part of it. And that actually, so Jennifer Stapleton, our first city administrator, started literally 3 days before I did. She started on the 1st and I started on the 3rd, something like that. Excuse me. I'm still recovering from a flu last week. So, you know, that was part of it. You know, I mentioned professionalism, a professional staff, and that city administrator position has been crucial for us as a city to be able to maintain that continuity from elected body to elected body, and also bring, you know, organize at the department head level our leadership team to make sure that that we're essentially, you know, keeping our priorities straight and that we have coherent and cohesive leadership at the top. And I think that position, and Jennifer in particular, has enabled us to pull together, I think, a fantastic leadership team over the last 8 years and accomplish far, far more than we could have otherwise. Mm-hmm.
And actually, the city administrator position became a campaign issue this year for the mayor's office. And our incoming mayor, Jeremy Graham, he's been indicating he wants to get rid of that position and go back to a system that vests more authority and, I guess, autonomy in department heads. What is your take on that? And do you think that's likely to happen once he's in there and has the reality of the running the city in front of him?
Yeah, great question. I'll pick up the first part of that first. I think that would be tragic, actually. And I'm not sure what he means in terms of, I have heard some of that rhetoric on the campaign trail, and I'm not sure what he means in terms of create more autonomy for department heads. Department heads do have a lot of autonomy within their department. They are the kings and queens of their fiefdom, But what we do have now is better coordination and better support for that leadership team with the city administrator position. So I think that would be a tragedy, actually, if that position were to be eliminated. I think that's one of the achievements that we've had in the last 8 years that's allowed the city to be exceptionally successful and accomplish far more than I'm sure it would have otherwise. And then that continuity from elected body to elected body is critical. To whether or not the new mayor is going to be able to achieve that is up to be determined. I know that of the existing council members, four will remain, and I know they're in support of the administrator position. It would take a vote of the majority of the council plus the mayor to eliminate that position, or a unanimous council without the mayor's support to eliminate that position. So we'll see. I guess time will tell on that, but I think it would be two steps back for the city if that were to occur.
Just in terms of handling the nuts and bolts of daily operations.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it would really rock the boat just across the whole leadership team and across the city staff in administration generally. I think you'd see quite a bit of fallout there, and I'm not sure. That would be a challenge for the city to recover from that. It would set us back for some time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you count the professional organization of the city as one of your accomplishments. Tell us some more. You got a list. You said of 20 things that are worth remarking on, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think in terms of infrastructure, there's been some really significant things. We've created a dark fiber backbone. This was early on. I want to say it was 2017 or 18. The years kind of run together after a while, Chris. But it comes with all these gray hairs, you know. Excuse me.
Yeah, you're not kind of lacking in that department compared to some of us.
But really, that brought Ting to town and created a more competitive environment for high-speed fiber. And I think we're going to continue to see more of that. Hopefully, we're going to try and get that distributed through downtown core as well. That's always been part of the vision. But that's been, a big need of the city for a long time. And accomplishing that in the early years of this administration was really a huge win. And along those lines, really upgrading City Hall to it's more of a modern City Hall with not just, looks nice and all that, but the way customer service operates there is really pretty slick, and it's sort of the gold standard of how City Halls operate. If you go city to city, you'll recognize that. Police was upgraded with that as well, and so there have been significant safety improvements in the police department. Including, take-home stop squad cars, which was really huge for our police department to be able to, for their own safety and just for the ease of transition in their shifts, to be able to take their cars home and bring them to work. That was a huge win for the department.
There wasn't a policy earlier.
Correct. No? Yeah. And then also just the IT improvements have been huge. We're much more secure in terms of IT security now than we ever have been. And in terms of backups throughout City Hall, in fact, we've got a transfer switch we've been waiting for, gosh, I don't even know. It's been like over a year. We've been waiting for a transfer switch that arrives, I think on Monday, that's going to be installed at City Hall, so that if we did have a significant power outage, that we've got state-of-the-art generator that'll keep things operating smoothly at City Hall there. And then all of the upgrades that came with COVID and a lot of those COVID dollars that enabled civic engagement to improve public access and for anyone wanting to participate at meetings at City Hall and whatnot. Those have all been huge improvements. And then also on the infrastructure side, wastewater has always been an issue here at the city. It's amazing that we've have a wastewater treatment plant that's decades beyond its useful life, really. And it's kind of one of those things that's been, you know, the can's been kicked down the road for so many years that, and this administration has taken that on, and we've done what we call bridge improvements over the last several years. We've made substantial investments into the wastewater treatment facility to get us to start rebuilding the plant piece by piece, and get us ultimately a new wastewater treatment plant. And that's going to continue next year. We're going to continue with the design engineering for that new plant to go through the final phases of complete transformation, which will be a massive public investment for this community. But really just moving that ball down the field, and it's been ignored for far too long. So and then, of course, downtown streets, you know, more continuing on the theme of infrastructure. We completed there's one more phase. Phase three is yet to come, and we'll begin the design engineering for phase three. That's actually this next council meeting that's going out to bid for that contract. But that'll be the final phase for the completion of the revitalization of downtown streets, which has been underway really since Urban Renewal was created back in 2005. That was the original intention of that Urban Renewal Agency, the downtown agency. The roundabout out at the airport, another Urban Renewal project. With the art out there at Schweitzer Cutoff.
How about the streets downtown where they were widened right in the downtown core? We have the wider streets now, the wider sidewalks and the different parking scheme. That was a big change, and I think that took place during your watch. Is that correct?
Yeah. And maybe I wasn't clear. That's what I was just referring to.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, downtown streets. So it started with So during this administration, we did first in Cedar, and then improved the parking there. Went to diagonal parking went down to two lanes downtown, and then there's the gray water treatment that's part of that as well. So it's significantly improving the stormwater treatment to protect water quality entering the Pondere system there from downtown. So, and then of course it's just like as you mentioned, wider sidewalks, much more inviting downtown ambiance there. So
I'll say that there's some folks that love it, and the fact that it by design it forces people to slow down the way the downtown's been configured now. But there are some people that complain that, hey, it takes too long to get through downtown. But as I understand the design of the downtown, the idea was to make it more walking friendly, pedestrian friendly.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think you hit it right on the head. It really is. It actually performs better than I was expecting. One thing that we were concerned about is bike traffic through downtown. I ride my bike downtown all the time, and I love it as a bicyclist. It's wonderful how slow the traffic moves on First Avenue. It really feels pretty safe on a bicycle. So that's I think is a huge win. One thing, it'd be great if there was one thing that I would like to see changed going forward. I think it would be even safer and operate much more smoothly if we went to diagonal back-end parking on First. In fact, throughout the downtown core, I think would be huge. And that's probably the single greatest change that you can make to improve safety, not just for bicyclists, but really for drivers as well. And
so when they pull out their nose out and they can see better.
Yeah. It's better visibility both for the parker and the oncoming traffic. And then you're moving with the traffic, not against it. And then of course, if you're moving stuff in and out of the car, you're doing it on the sidewalk side, not out on the street side. Mm-hmm. It's just all around. I mean, there's a list of all the reasons why back end is a safer way to park. Mm-hmm. And then obviously for a bicyclist, it's you have that eye-to-eye contact with the person pulling out, and again, you're moving with traffic, not backing into it. So, that was, maybe that's something that can, the next mayor can take on. I know he's a planner.
That's right. Jeremy Grimm is a former city planner.
Uh-huh. Excuse me.
One of the things I think would fall under infrastructure, or you could say recreation, was the improvements to Memorial Field.
Yeah.
That occurred. That was the result of a local option tax, the 1% local option tax that was passed in 2015. The money from that, the extra penny that people paid for purchases in the town and within city limits were dedicated to Memorial Field, specifically replacing the grandstands, which actually were, I think you could say they were at the end of their useful life. They were even possibly going to be condemned.
Yeah. So
you were here for that entire construction period. I think as a council person, you favored, supported the local option tax.
Absolutely.
What was that like, bringing those improvements to Memorial Field?
Yeah, that was huge, and I'm glad you mentioned that, and that's also, you know, in alignment with infrastructure. Parks and recreation, open space, those are quality of life related issues that were a huge priority of this administration, and I think the city did so well for voters to approve that 1% local option tax, and Memorial Field has just been, a real gift to the community. One thing that there was a lot of debate around, grass versus turf, and I know you fell on the other side of that debate, Chris.
I was on the grass side, personally, yeah.
You know, and I was, too, all along, and the thing that convinced me to come over to the turf side is how much more playability we get with the turf. And that was a deciding factor. I think, in a town, northern town, where we really only get about 4, 5 months of playability, if we're lucky.
On the grass turf.
On the grass turf, yeah. Thank you.
Because of the seasons and the rain and snow that come, for a big chunk of time, Memorial Field wasn't playable.
Yeah. Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. And on a day like today, or a lot of days, even in the winter, when maybe it's sunny outside and the snow's melted or whatever, you can see kids out there playing on the turf, on days like this. So throughout the winter, so just the amount of playability, and then kids get out there, teams get out there at least a month early for practices and whatnot, and they stay out there a month longer into the fall. So. And then the other thing is you can just go back to back to back. The grass needs to rest in order to grow and continue to be, quality turf, quality surface. But that turf, you can just play back to back to back, and there's no rest period required. So, we actually get several times the amount of playability out of that, and it's a much better investment for the community. And honestly, as a soccer player, it's really fun to play on too. So... So I think that was a huge win for the community, and
it did impact the Festival at Sandpoint. Was one of the impacts there. How do you feel it's done for the festival? There were concerns that it would be way too warm because it in the summer does retain more heat on that artificial surface, and then the other impact there is that the fees for the festival went up. Because of the protections, I think, that are required for the field. What feedback do you have there, or response do you have to the impact on the festival?
Yeah, well, I hear that argument, and I think because the festival happens in the evening, I think those concerns are, the heat is not really a factor because they're evening events. Mm-hmm.
Being on the field for those shows, it is decent. It's decently tolerable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Temperatures. Yeah.
Yeah. And, most of those shows are starting, around sundown. And so that works out. If those shows were at, 2 in the afternoon, might be more of an issue. Mm-hmm. So that's one factor. And then, as far as the additional cost, understandable. I think, there is a cost to this. And while we were able to pay for most of the capital costs through the tax, there are ongoing maintenance issues. and precautions that need to be taken to protect that surface from, you know, load impacts like the tent and whatnot. So, you know, it's cost of doing business, but I think all in all, it was money well spent and a good move by the city, given all that the way that it keeps paying back, you know, year after year.
With the performance for the athletic teams.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what? Take another 5 minutes and tell us some more things that you feel like were good accomplishments in your term.
Yeah, I think in 2000, as part of the strategic plan, and what resulted was the most comprehensive master planning effort the city's ever undertaken. We had over a dozen master plans that followed everything from, you know, capital improvement plans to the comprehensive land use plan that is just being finalized right now. Arts and Culture Master Plan, which was the first in the city's history, and many others, a multimodal master plan. So there were many master plans that followed that really ensured that the city was thoughtful about how it, again, how it invested its limited resources and prioritized its investments into the future. And that really was, I think, the right move to make sure that we head into this growth period, which the city's been experiencing for the last number of years, and we have every reason to believe that that's going to continue in the future, that we're well prepared to manage and handle this growth that is impending. So I think that was huge for the city. We've made, you know, you mentioned the sports complex, or rather Memorial Field, but we've also made a major investment in an indoor sports complex at Travers, which is something that this community has aspired for decades. And then the watershed recreation master plan was something that was a vision of mine back when I came onto council in 2013. So seeing that come to fruition really just in the last year has really been, you know, something that has made me really proud for the city. So happy to see the work that Pondere Peddlers have continued to do up in the watershed to, in partnership with the city, to improve recreational trails up in that area. It just gets better and better. And I see that continuing into the future, and we're going to continue to have just developed an incredible trail system and recreational network up there that at the same time respects and protects water quality into perpetuity. So that was really huge, I think, a big win for the city. And then, let's see.
I want to circle back on the James Russell Sports Center, because that was a flashpoint in most recently. And it wasn't that people were opposed to the building of the center, which is generously being paid for by a $7.5 million donation by the James Russell family, but the location became a matter of contention. Actually, we had protests on that. What would you say to the folks that were upset about the location and the fact that some trees were removed for that?
Yeah, well, I understand the concern, and you know, when again, this is when we're facing growth and increasingly limited space and limited resources. We knew that an indoor sports facility was a top priority for this community for many, many years. Before I got here, there was already committee groups and city groups that were getting together, trying to figure out how we could get a facility like that here, and then we had done multiple surveys over the years that confirmed our assumption there, but you know, we don't have unlimited land resources here, and we don't have unlimited funding, and so. We were constrained with, you know, we have what we have, and we knew that there was going to be impacts locating it anywhere that we choose to locate it. There's going to be impacts, and so I think the council made the best decision that it could with what we have, And, you know, nobody likes to see trees go, and nobody likes to give up open space, but we knew it had to go somewhere, and that was the space that that made the most sense for the most number of reasons.
Okay. Well, Shelby, there's more on your list, I know, of things that got accomplished during your term. But what would you say to your supporters that put you in office for two terms, three if you count the council? Are there any words you'd like to express?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I just want to thank citizens for giving me this privilege and opportunity to serve over the last 12 years as an elected official, and it has truly been an honor. I hope I've done right by you, and I think I have a lot of trust and faith in city staff. I'm very grateful to city staff for all the hard work that they have done and continue to do each and every day. We have such a fantastic team at the city. We're really blessed to have the level of professionalism and expertise that we have at the city, and I hope that is recognized and appreciated and respected. And it's been an honor to serve with multiple councils that I have over the years. With everybody, you know, people complain about government, and I used to be one of those people that complain about government. And when you get involved, you realize that, and you pull back the curtain, you realize that it's really not a conspiracy.
And it really is people that are just trying to do their best.
That's right. Everybody is there for the right reasons. They're trying to do the best for their community, and they really care. And we all have different perspectives, and that's as it should be. But it really has been an honor to work with all of those wonderful people. And this council in particular has really been a pleasure to work with. I appreciate the opportunity to serve, and it has truly been an honor.
Mm-hmm. Shelby, what's next for you in just the minute or two we have left? You're not moving from Sandpoint. I take it. You're dug in here.
I'm dug in. Yep. And, you know, even if the future does take us elsewhere, we're always going to maintain a presence here. And we absolutely love Sandpoint. I love Sandpoint. I've been here for 25 years. And so moving forward, I started a company, Watershed Equity, and listeners may be familiar with the Qualified Opportunity Zone. I manage a fund called Watershed Opportunity Fund, and the purpose of which is to invest in communities like Sandpoint and do what we can to solve community problems like workforce housing, for instance, which has been identified as a huge need, not just in this community, but all over the country. And the Opportunity Zone is a way to to build housing that's more affordable, leveraging the tax advantages of the Qualified Opportunity Zone. So that's where I'm focused in the near future, and excited to continue to have a positive impact on my community and other communities that we serve in the future.
And that actually ends up being a good segue to talk about affordable housing, because we're going to be talking with two folks from the Bonner Homeless Transitions in just a moment. But I want to say, Shelby Ronstad, our outgoing mayor, hey, thanks for, you know, 15 years in the trenches helping lead the city, and thanks for coming in to speak today as well.
Thank you, Chris. It's always been a pleasure to sit here with you and discuss issues with the city, and I hope it's not the last. Maybe next time you can pull me in as a member at large who's criticizing the administration. That would be fun.
Well, you'll have that opportunity. We all will. It's kind of the nature of the game, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, thanks a lot, Shelby.